And indeed, you're tuned in to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM. We've made contact with Amon Jordan, and on the line is Michael Birmingham. He's a 32-year-old Irish man who has been in Iraq, in Baghdad, since September 2002. This was a program initiated by Voices in the Wilderness, the Iraq peace team. Members have remained in the country even as the U.S. carries out its invasion. On April 1st, 13 Iraq peace team members arrived in Amman, Jordan, on a very harrowing journey from Baghdad, while another 13 Iraq peace team activists will remain indefinitely inside the country to document and report on humanitarian consequences that the new U.S. war is having and will continue to have on the ordinary people living in Iraq. Right now we have on the line Michael Birmingham. Hello, Michael, are you there?
Yes, how you doing?
Can you hear me okay?
I can, yeah.
Okay, great. Michael Birmingham has been acting as a peace activist in Ireland for a number of years, working as a homeless advocate, and has been concerned about the war and the ongoing Gulf War for the last 12 years in Iraq and the effects of the U.S.-led sanctions for a number of years. Michael, thanks for joining us today. I imagine it's somewhat later on in the evening where you are in Amman, Jordan. You just arrived there. Can you tell us how the journey was out of Baghdad?
Okay, well, actually, some members of my team arrived here yesterday. I arrived at the weekend, and our journey from Baghdad to the border involved, you know, passing by quite a lot of burnt out vehicles, which many of them seemed, you know, at face value to be civilian vehicles. Of course, I can't really confirm much more than that, but just as we were about to enter the Jordanian border, we realized that the third car in our convoy was missing, and we met with someone who had been traveling behind us in a different vehicle, some Somali refugee students who had been studying, medical students who had been studying in Baghdad and had to flee. They told us that our colleagues were actually, their car was turned upside down and there was blood in it a long way back. So we drove back about an hour and found the car, you know, empty. I think it had a blowout and there was indeed blood in it. So we went looking for them. So we didn't know, we obviously didn't know where they'd been taken or by who. And we found the nearest town and went to...
Was this Rutba?
Yeah. That's correct. Rutba,
the town of Rutba, and you did find your friends eventually, correct?
Yeah. Well, actually, what happened was when we entered Rutba, we asked some of the local people whether there was a hospital there, because we didn't know if they were in the town, and we didn't know if there was a hospital, so we just asked, "Is there a hospital?" And they pointed us to the people directed us to this building, which was completely bombed out. It was devastated, and they said that was a hospital. It was a children's hospital, they said. And so we asked, was there anywhere else, the doctors or clinics, and they directed us to another clinic, and in there we found our colleagues who were thankfully not too seriously injured, although one of them later transpired had a broken clavicle. We thought he might have he had back damage. We thought he might have spinal injuries. You know, the doctors did not think that he should be sitting up. They thought he needed to lie down and be transferred to another hospital, but we couldn't get an ambulance drive. There was three ambulances there, but we couldn't get an ambulance to take him because they were terrified of going out on the road. All the ambulance drivers believed that they would be attacked, and in fact we had, you know, passed earlier, not that far back, an ambulance that obviously was attacked and was on its side, and we couldn't get a taxi driver either in the town or any driver to take us out. They, you know, as we were speaking, there were B-52s circling overhead, and not far away we'd seen recent bombing, like buildings still on fire, and everybody in the town seemed, in fact, a lot more scared than the people in Baghdad had, and they were terrified. They believed anybody traveling on that road, civilian or ambulance, would be would be a target. So we had to all squeeze into the two cars and go to the Jordanian border.
We're hearing reports that the U.S. military has been attacking petrol gas stations. Can you confirm this on your from your experiences? I mean, how were you able to get? It's a pretty long journey, right? From Baghdad to where you are to the border in Jordan.
Yeah. How long is it from Baghdad to the Jordanian border?
We're speaking with Michael Birmingham. He's a 32-year-old Irishman who just arrived in Amman over the weekend.
Yeah, 550 kilometers, about 4.5 hours. I don't actually recall seeing any burnt-out petrol stations on the way. Oh, there are, some of my colleagues seen them, yeah.
Over the weekend, there was a massacre at a checkpoint by U.S. military. They shot into a van of women and children, and 10 people were killed. Did you pass through any checkpoints on your way, on your journey out? And did you see, like, can you describe for us, you know, what other, like, are you said ambulances were being targeted, but were there a lot of, would you say, was there more civilian vehicles and stuff being targeted on your journey?
The problem, of course, is that it's a little difficult to ascertain afterwards, you know, who was in vehicles. But there certainly was a lot of cars that just looked like civilian cars along the roads that had been attacked. We didn't meet any U.S. military, which is not to say that they weren't there. We passed by some like kind of empty armored personnel carriers, like Iraqi vehicles, and but a small group of our team came in about 3 days into the war, left Amman for Baghdad, and most of them returned have returned back out with me. But those people on their way in did meet an American patrol, which they assumed were special forces in Humvees, and they had actually fired on a pickup truck, and it was still ablaze, and my colleagues who were driving through just put white flags out of the window and drove slowly by and were able to manage that.
Wow. We're speaking with Michael Birmingham. He's a 32-year-old man from Ireland who has been in Baghdad, Iraq, since September 2002. Michael, thanks for joining us today again. Here in the United States, we get a lot of propaganda from the mainstream media, and groups like the Iraq Peace Team and other international peace activists that are in Iraq have been criticized by government, military officials, and the like, who accuse you of basically serving Saddam Hussein's regime. And what do you make of this? How do you respond to these kind of criticisms of what you're doing?
Well, we've always been very clear that our primary concern is with the Iraqi people who've been living through, you know, a humanitarian catastrophe for 12 years caused by war and sanctions. And, you know, notwithstanding what is, as you say, propaganda, we feel that, you know, it's important to do everything possible to try and end that, you know, this disaster for the Iraqi people. And unfortunately, it's just gotten much worse with this war. Like, I've been clear, and Voices in the Wilderness has been clear always, that we don't support the Iraqi government, don't condone its human rights record. I've had contact for many years with Iraqis who are outside Iraq and deeply critical of the record of the Iraqi government. But as those people would say, and many of them have still got family and friends left in Iraq, while they are very active in trying to oppose that government and its record on human rights, they do not believe that sanctions which have just brought poverty to the vast bulk of the Iraqi population, and war which has destroyed electrical and water treatment services and left even now, 12 years after the Gulf War, the country with you know, barely more than half of the clean water it had then, and huge numbers of children continuing to die as a result. They don't believe that these things have brought any improvement, and they find, you know, for the Iraqi people, and they find it quite sickening that people, the hypocrisy in using human rights as a justification for such a widespread destruction of a society.
Michael, you spent more than 6 months in Baghdad and lived through a couple of weeks of some really intense bombing. Can you describe for us what that was like for you?
You know, it's quite terrible in a way, because you know that the people around you are, you know, they're trying to bring. They've been struggling for, as I said, they've been struggling from everything, from their own government to the results of the sanctions and the war, to bring up their families, and to see people cope with this is terribly sad. I mean, the Iraqi people, the people in Baghdad, have shown strength and resilience in over the last 2 weeks, which are genuinely amazing. You know, it's not patronizing to say that, and you only wish that these people who are, you know, and like many people I've met who are incredibly good-humored and strong and practical in terms of how they've dealt with this and in dealing with, you know, they protect their families, they've saved up their rations, they've taped up their windows, they open their doors so that they don't get smashed by the percussion from the bombs. And they remain calm. They don't allow panic to frighten their kids. You only wish that the kind of talent and that you know, in a nation of 24 million people with a deep cultural heritage, and you know, you only wish the talent that people had could be used for something more productive than trying to survive. You know, survive this war. They've had to survive the sanctions, the Gulf War. You know, one of the Iran-Iraq War, which was one of the most brutal wars in the world for many decades, and in the last few days before I left, going around Baghdad and seeing increasingly the civilian damage that was done, but you know, whether it was in the marketplaces or the neighborhoods that had houses destroyed by bombings. It's heartbreaking. And beyond that, you know that the even bigger crisis is not just the people that are actually killed by bombs that may go astray. It's the millions of people that are utterly dependent on a food ration system that is likely to already be finished because of this war. And no amount of high protein biscuits from any humanitarian agency can make up for what the World Food Programme has repeatedly said in Iraq is one of the world's most efficient and widespread food distribution systems. We've probably already destroyed that, and the malnutrition and the disease that will result, it won't be seen on CNN, but it'll kill in a massive way these people who are far more vulnerable than 1991, and even then it killed hugely. Now people have not got the strength or the reserve to withstand it.
You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM, and we're speaking with Michael Birmingham, 32-year-old man from Ireland who's been in Iraq since September 2002. He arrived in Amman, Jordan over the weekend. Here in the United States, we get pronouncements in the media that U.S. forces, when they arrived in Iraq, they would be greeted with open arms. And now, as we're seeing over the last 2 weeks, that claim has been not true. The United States war planners seem to have not really prepared for the response that the Iraqi people have shown. We get that in the media, and there's always this justification that what we're doing is trying to liberate those people, but I'm curious, two-part question is, like, A, how are the, you know, from your experience, you've been there for over 6 months, like, you're talking about them being kind of deflated from years of sanctions and that kind of thing. Do you think that there's a lot of sentiment for the U.S. military, and what is the media coverage like there? Were you able to see a lot of that? And can you just give us a sense of what that is? I mean, does the media act as sort of a propaganda machine like it does here in the United States?
Yeah, oh, it does, of course. I mean, the Iraqi media is giving a full square behind the Iraqi government and is very strongly producing, you know, patriotic music at the moment. It's been bombed continually, actually, and is just barely functioning at this point. But no, it doesn't give a balanced account. But, you know, in terms of this idea of liberation, I think many Iraqi people, and probably the vast bulk of them, although it's very hard, it's very hard to quantify this because people can't ever speak freely on this subject, you know, but I think people clearly do want change, you know, in terms of their own government. But, the mistake that has been made, and it's a terrible mistake, is to assume that because people want an improvement in their government or a change of their government, that means they're willing to accept U.S. war and accept U.S. troops on the ground. That is a colossal error. We're starting, and we're only beginning to learn what a huge mistake the U.S. government has made in assuming that. Whatever resistance is there at the moment is the tip of the iceberg of what will happen, I believe, if the Iraqi government, and I guess it will be overthrown, if the Iraqi government is overthrown and you see U.S. Marines on the ground in Baghdad, I really fear for what, you know, for what will happen at that point. I mean, Iraqi people have lived with the results of the U.S. war for many years, but I think more pointedly, I'm afraid that the Iraqi people will, at the moment, the anger that they have towards their government means that, you know, the kind of real anger that you would see towards U.S. control is somewhat muted. You know, people are just, you know, but there's no doubt from talking to it. You cannot meet an Iraqi in Baghdad who will tell you they want troops on the ground. I talked to the odd person who very, very seldom, you know, would say this, and it's dangerous for them, but people have said that they want rid of the government, they don't want American troops on the ground one day longer. And you'll even hear Iraqi opposition people saying that outside. And, you know, we've made a big mistake. We have not listened to the Arab world for 12 years. We've not listened to the Iraqi people for 12 years. And these are the people who we listen to experts. We listen to American experts in America. We want to have European experts, Middle Eastern experts in Europe. The people who know this country and could have told us, we've decided we don't want to listen to them. And I fear not just for the Iraqi people, I fear for the American soldiers who, you know, who've grown up with a media that has trained them to be, I mean, genuinely, and I say this with respect, I mean, we've been brought up to be arrogant about our own culture, and it's not appreciated in Iraq. It won't be appreciated in Iraq. They do not want, American troops, and they do not want an American general controlling them, and they will not tolerate it. And that's where you will really see resistance. And it's a terrible, bleak scenario that is good for nobody, not the Iraqis, not the American people, and not the world.
We're getting the impression here, like you're saying, that it didn't go quite as the U.S. war planners had. But what do you think that the people feel about Saddam Hussein being overthrown by the U.S. military? Do you think that they're rejecting U.S. military occupation, but they're also kind of glad to see Saddam? Is that kind of how you feel things are going?
It doesn't look like that at the moment. I mean, I think people do want to change a government, but right now their overriding priority is to protect their families, their neighborhoods, and their country, and that's the way it looks. You can never tell because it's very hard to talk to people about these issues in Iraq, but you walking around Baghdad, there is no evidence anywhere of people, caving in, people ready to, you know, I hear these stories of the government forcing people to fight. I don't know whether or not that's true, but you look at at the soldiers on the ground, and it doesn't look that way. It, to be perfectly honest, it, whatever people's reaction is to Saddam Hussein, and like I say, I'm sure it's a negative one. Right now, they're being invaded by the United States, and they don't support that invasion. That's what it looks like, and I have no doubt whatsoever that if the government is overthrown and there is an American troops remain on the ground, as is the plan, there will be virtually nobody in Iraq that will support that, and there will be people in Iraq that will fight it, and they know how to fight. They fought for many years, and they've said that. Even doctors have said this to me. They didn't want this war. They didn't ask for this war, but now it's upon them, and they know how to deal with war.
And we're speaking with Michael Birmingham, 32-year-old man from Ireland. He's in Amman, Jordan. Just one final thought. Well, two thoughts. First, can you give us an idea of what the mood is in Jordan and the rest of the Muslim or Arab world about the war? I mean, how is the mood there? Like, how have people treated you as a Westerner?
Well, in Jordan, people are very, very angry about this war. You know, it's easier here even to speak to people on this matter, and I have yet to meet a Jordanian that supports it. There's, you know, incredible opposition, and people are annoyed. They're very, you know, I came through here maybe more than 5 months ago on my way to Iraq, and now I notice something different. I notice people that are very angry with their own, you know, many people are angry with their own government for sitting on the fence, and I think a lot of Arab people feel that their governments are sitting on the fence. The governments didn't support the war in Iraq, but they're afraid to stand up to the United States and actively oppose it, and I think that's causing the war is a source of incredible anger directed towards the U.S. government. I haven't felt any anger towards us. I mean, the people continue to mostly be warm, but I guess that, you know, there may come a limit to that, and I hope not, but you know, I don't think that you can continually show yourself to be in callous disregard for people's lives and not face at some point people defending themselves.
I read a story on the Common Dreams news site about your journey through to Rutba, and I found it very interesting that they, you know, as you know, you were helped out, even though, despite the fact that those people are being invaded by the United States and British forces, they're still able to have compassion for injured Americans and other, you know, other internationals who are in their country. I guess, well, can you just leave us with one final thought, and that is that 13 of your Iraq peace team comrades and other members there are still in Baghdad while the bombing is going on, and it seems that U.S. forces are pushing ever closer to Baghdad. The last report I read was that they were within 20 miles of the city and heavy fighting is going on. What is their mood like? I mean, they decided to stay indefinitely. Can you just leave us with some thoughts about that? How do you feel about that?
I mean, the people from our team that are remaining in Baghdad do so at great peril to their lives. It's an incredibly dangerous situation that's becoming more dangerous every day. And as they would want it to be said, it's not just dangerous for them. It's dangerous for, in many ways, the 24 million Iraqi people that are living there. But those the Iraq peace team people who remain in Baghdad, they've made a decision that there needs to be, if the U.S. government is going to destroy this society, you know, we need to know about it. There needs to be witnesses from America. There needs to be witnesses from Europe that's going to be able to give testimony to what our own governments have done to this country. We've shown ourselves consistently disinterested in what Iraqi people have told us about what Arab people have told us has been going on. And these people are taking a very big risk to try and show solidarity with the Iraqi people at this time. It's a big risk, and maybe people back home will hopefully be in some way inspired to take risks also, because I think people need to take more courage to do whatever is necessary to end this war immediately. and maybe to do a little bit more than we ordinarily would. Whatever it is we think is most effective, even at some cost to ourselves, we've got to start doing it, because this is a terrible moment for the world, a terrible moment for Iraq, and a terrible moment for the United States. It's worthy of us pushing ourselves a little bit further, like those people, maybe not at risk to our lives as those people in Baghdad are doing, but at least it's deserving of us really of really doing whatever we can to stop this immediately.
And I really want to thank you, Michael Birmingham, for taking time out today to speak with us here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, and wish you the best of luck. And what are your plans now that you're in Jordan? Are you headed towards Ireland? Are you going to stay in the region there? And
At the moment, I'm planning on heading to Ireland for a short while, and I probably come back to the U.S. and back to Jordan, and depending on, and we'll have to assess what the situation is in Iraq then. And you know, I was asked to leave by by the government in the context of a situation of a war situation where they're becoming increasingly concerned about security, and yeah. Maybe they it may not be possible to get back in. I'll certainly try and work in solidarity with those many people around the world who are in the anti-war movement around the world who are trying to stop this. I'll try and be with them and do what I can from here also.
All right. Well, we're going to let you go now. I really appreciate you taking the time out, like I said, to join us. And can you give us just quickly some contact information for the Iraq Peace Team, and what do you think people in the United States could do more? You were talking earlier about what people should step up. What can people do right now to kind of help out what you're doing?
I think this is a question that always people are a little bit best able to answer for themselves, depending on what their situation is, what their own experience, what contacts they have, what knowledge. Every human being in the world we're gifted with tremendous intelligence and tremendous capacities. If we used them, there wouldn't be a war. In this context, I think people need to start looking at continuing to build bigger marches on the street, maybe making, doing more direct, non-violent, direct action, making it much more difficult for the U.S. government to get away with this war. Lobby, get your friends out, write, read, but be active, in whatever is the most effective way possible. And, many people around the world are against this and come from different perspectives, but what unites so many of us is opposition to the war, and we need to try and find ways of working together, even as we disagree with our colleagues about the methods. We need to find ways of just continuing to be effective and maybe working with people we wouldn't agree on with about everything, but concentrating on the devastation that this is going to bring to Iraqi people who can't be active, who can do nothing about this. And that's the only advice I guess I could give.
Well, those are great words to leave it at there, and we really appreciate your time today.
Okay, bye.
And that was Michael Birmingham joining us on the phone from Amman, Jordan, here today on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And as I mentioned, there are still 13 Iraq Peace Team members who will remain in Baghdad indefinitely, and we'll try to keep up with their activities. You can go to VITW.org and link to the Iraq Peace Team website that is also IraqPeaceTeam.org and find out more information about what they're doing there. Stay tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM.